Bueno, fíjate.
Million people will lose their jobs each month.
Quantity and no quality will be disciplined.
Recall the passage of this bill. Armageddon! Armageddon! End of freedom as we... Freedom as we know it!
Listening to the queen of internet talk radio, Heather Bachman with Heather on the Hill.
Hello, America. I'm Heather Bachman, and welcome to another edition of Heather on the Hill. Sadly, as a result of illness, James Ellen had to cancel being on the program, but fear not, my fellow Americans. I do have an incredible interview, as well as some incredible articles from our Tower of Truth. The interview is with Andy Sullivan. He has been on this program before. He is the creator of the Blue Collar Corner, as well as the Hard Hat Pledge. And not only is he an amazing blogger, but he's also one that has created within himself an incredible objective within the 9/11 mosque fiasco. You know, one of the biggest things that I do this program for is to recognize regular people literally realizing that this nation needs them and going for the guns, going for it and working hard for it. You know, TNC, she did not need to run for West Virginia House of Delegates, but she did because she realized she needed to be, and she needed there to be there. And although she lost, she has created foundations like Pillows for Patriots. And Andy is a blue-collar worker. He's not a politician. He is not a government official. He's not even a military official. He is just a regular guy who has been working with his hands for years and realizes that something is about to be built that shouldn't, which is the 9/11 mosque. Now, he's going to talk about not only current events regarding the 9/11 mosque, but also this upcoming amazing premiere of this incredible documentary regarding the 9/11 mosque. So I hope you really listen to this interview, and I hope you make it to this premiere, because it is very important that we show some real honest-to-goodness support against this before it's too late, before it actually happens. Now, before I get into my Tower of Truth, I do want to make a little bit of a comment about this 9/11 mosque, because even to this day, even though it has not made the New York Times lately, I still get verbally attacked and rebutted against regarding my support against the 9/11 mosque. And a colleague of mine said, "It's our rights. Aren't you for the Constitution?" And I'm looking at her going, "You do realize it's your president that's been spitting on this Constitution and using it for a napkin for the past year, right? Year or so. You realize that, right?" And she shuts up immediately and walks away, scoffing. Ugh. I love this Constitution. I love this nation. I spend my weekends sitting in front of a computer, a laptop computer, talking to a microphone because I love this country so much, and writing articles and working campaigns that I believe in. I adore my Constitution. I love this country. But my Constitution and my Bill of Rights will not be used against me. I forbid it. We already have so many bills and so many laws, which we'll get into in the Tower of Truth, I promise you, that are being pushed against us by our own government. And now we have an outsider, an international enemy, that is the Iman, not only getting support from our government, even if my Mayor Bloomberg calls me a bigot, and by the way, I'll wear that label proudly, Mr. Bloomberg. And our former Speaker of the House stating that funding regarding the actions against it by the American people, which by the way is our American right, has to be investigated, while this man, an international enemy who has connections to international enemies, is okay, isn't doesn't need to be investigated. We need to be investigated as an American public, as a 501c3 or a political action committee or whatever organization she's talking about that day. We're supposed to be investigated. But he's going to go on a United Nations tour for fundraising of this mosque. And don't tell me it was for peacekeeping. No, this man doesn't know the word peacekeeping. This man doesn't know the meaning. He actually has said, not only do we have more Muslim blood on our hands than the Al-Qaeda, but supposedly he wants a Muslim flag over the White House someday. Not over my dead body, Iman. I don't think so. That is not happening. But that is the nation that we're creating when we support these kind of people. So we have people like Andy Sullivan, myself, as well as James Lafferty, who has been on this program many, many times. He's actually involved not only in a coalition against the Sharia law, but also in a coalition that watches these mosques that are still being watched by the FBI, creating this bureaucracy within themselves, this hypocrisy rather within itself. And we just stand idly by and our American government takes it. Take a look around your area at the mosques that are popping up around you and figure out how much time it takes for a regular church or even a community center, an actual community center, not one that's just called a community center, an actual community center, and see how long it takes for the mosque and see how long it takes for the community center. Because I have done some research and I see that there are community centers that are still waiting for grants and still waiting for permission to be built while this mosque takes literally weeks in whatever state it ends up being. We're literally allowing ourselves to be invaded as a result. And now they want to put one on hallowed ground. And yes, Iman, it is hallowed ground. And we're going to turn around and we're just going to turn our backs. Here's the thing. The Iman, not only has he made statements like that, and I know I'm getting on a little bit of a tangent, but I have a point here, as usual. The Iman, not only has he made statements against this nation, but he also makes backward statements. A great example is he was, I believe, on Larry King. And he said that if he could take it back, what he's doing, if he could take it back, he would. So what happened? Donald Trump said, okay, fine. I'll buy the building from you. And you can use that money, plus whatever money you have to build this dang thing. And you can go wherever you need to go. What does Iman do? Rejects the offer and goes off on an international trip paid by you and me. Do you see a problem here? Or is it just me? We'll be right back right after this with the Tower of Truth and very soon, Andy Sullivan of the Hard Hat Pledge.
Christopher Fredrickson, the 21st century Paul Revere, host of the Paul Revere Show and North Carolina senatorial candidate, and you're listening to Heather on the Hill with Heather Bachman.
Yes, you are listening to the Heather on the Hill radio program. I am Heather Bachman. We have a great show with an amazing guest, as I said before. His name is Andy. He is an amazing, amazing American. Every time I talk to him, I say, you have to run for Congress, and I pray that he does. But he gives a great interview. It's actually a bit longer than I usually have my interviews, but the reason why is that he just has this chock full of information that I need you guys to get. The 9/11 mosque is a travesty within itself. He says this amazing comment about how it's really actually already being built without our knowledge. And he's just an incredible, incredible person. He actually has said to me many times that this is a fight he will fight till literally the end. And I do believe that, and I will fight also. I have said my fiancé will be signing the Hard Hat Pledge. He is a coppersmith, and he will not step foot onto that property. And I personally have, with my interviews with him and with Jim Lafferty and my own actions, will fight also till the end. This not mosque cannot happen. But before we get into his interview, let's get to the Tower of Truth. The first subject, obviously, is this so-called agreement between the Republicans and the Democrats. And already, the Democrats are crying foul. Now, here's the reason why this is not surprising to me, number one. But number two, should be surprising to you. Now, for the reason why this is not surprising to me is because it gives things that Democrats don't want to give. It gives small business owners with 250 plus income tax break. It gives Americans on all levels tax breaks that they were already planning for economically. And it also gives them a reason to complain, which they love to do. Now, here's the reason why you should be surprised. You shouldn't be surprised, rather, or should be surprised, rather. I was correct the first time. I apologize. You should be surprised, number one, because these are supposedly the bipartisan party. They are actually crying about being bipartisan and actually having a bipartisan agreement, number one. Number two, this is with Obama's seal of approval. Isn't Obama their golden boy? Guess not. And the third reason and the final reason that I see it as being a pretty good surprise is they're getting things they want too. They're getting things they want too. They're getting taxes. They're getting. I can't even fathom why they're complaining, to tell you the truth. They're getting things too. They're getting taxes. They're getting a limit to these tax breaks. It's not permanent. It's 2 years. They got the unemployment insurance they've been begging for, which, by the way, Republicans are not against unemployment insurance. They're against giving it without being able to pay for it. And they're still complaining. You know, I recently read an article in the Washington Post about it, and immediately they were talking about turning it down. They were talking against it. They were screaming, they were ranting, they were raving, they were complaining. Barney Frank was crying. And two of the biggest legislators that have been against it have been my own, I'm sorry to say. Kirsten Gillibrand is crazy. This woman is nuts. She is my legislator. I'm giving full disclosure, and I'm not happy about it. We need Joe DiGuardi faster than you can say the. And the reason why is because she's actually against this when she really has nothing to do with it. You know, she was appointed without our approval, number one. Number two, she was appointed to become the second person to be the most liberal legislator in New York, number two, next to Hillary. And number three, and I love how a colleague of mine said this, she literally is the luckiest person in the world, but we've become, as a result, the unluckiest district. And I am so angry and frustrated that she is still my senator. But I'll get off my little personal tangent and move on a little bit. The next thing on the Tower of Truth I wanted to discuss is the WikiLeaks situation. Now, I have been in many a radio station, many a television station, and already many a screaming match with a lot of liberals about this certain situation. Thankfully, this man is in prison. Prison should be the furthest of what we do to him, but right now he's in prison. And right now his supporters are attacking MasterCard and SarahPalin.com in retaliation. What that does, I have no idea, but let's move on from that. What do I think of WikiLeaks? WikiLeaks is terrorism. And I don't care the document, whether or not the documentation is impactful. I'm saying this again, and we spoke about this in the last segment. Perception is important. WikiLeaks is a threat. It is more, as much of a threat as Osama bin Laden. For two reasons. One, impact on the future of this nation. Two, threats against the future of this nation. You know, in a recent op-ed, and I believe I already discussed this in the previous segment, but I want to discuss this a little further. In the recent op-ed, he actually compares himself, the founder of WikiLeaks, and I will not say his name because I don't think he has a right to have his name being heard. The founder of WikiLeaks has compared himself to the reporter that released the Pentagon Papers, as well as the Supreme Court case which supported the Pentagon Papers. Now, there are many reasons off the top of my head and off the top of any intellectual's head or any smart person, anybody with two IQs able to rub together, to know why this is a bad thing, why this is not a good comparison, why it's not a comparison at all. It's a contrast. The person who released the Pentagon Papers was an American citizen, was a pro-American citizen, was a journalist, and also was looking to assist this nation with more information. WikiLeaks found, the WikiLeaks founder, and like I said, I will not say his name because I don't believe he has a right to have his name heard on the radio, has said many times the reason why he's doing this is to embarrass and inflict and affect negatively this nation. It's not a reporter's duty to inflict harm on this nation. It's a terrorist's duty to inflict harm on this nation. You know, I'm a former reporter, and that's one of the reasons why I took that op-ed to heart majorly. I started my professional career as a reporter. I was a stringer for many newspapers, radio stations, television stations. And when he compared himself to another reporter, I got really upset because I said to myself, that's the reason why I left, because people compared these idiots, and I call him an idiot is so small to what I want to call him, but I have the FCC to worry about, to the extent of no return, no exchange. The responsibility, I should say, of a journalist, a real journalist, and I'm not saying the Katie Couric's and the George Stephanopoulos's, those aren't reporters. The real journalists are to find the truth in order to assist a situation. For instance, Nellie Bly. Nellie Bly actually went undercover to an insane asylum to show that women were being taken in, sent to this insane asylum, rather, for the wrong reasons, whether they're prostitution or their ex-husbands were cops or what have you. And it's still happening to this day. But there were still reforms as a result in order to assist this nation. That's a reporter. This man is a terrorist. He's a threat to this nation. He's a threat to society. And he's a threat to the future of this nation, as well as not only the nation, but also the world. I apologize for getting a little tongue-tied there. The third aspect on the Tower of Truth, and I just got a smile about this, the Barack Obama press conference after the agreement. I've never seen a man more battered in my life, first of all, and more tired and more obnoxiously annoyed at anything since Bill Clinton went up to the nation and said, I did not have sexual relations with that woman, and looked back at us. If you watch that clip, he looks back at us with this anger and this resentment. Now, near the end of Obama's press conference, when he was just reiterating this agreement, so to speak, he said, put everything that I've promised on a list and look back and tell me that I haven't done what I promised. Now, think about this. Everything that he promised, and I have a list right in front of me of everything that he promised, and I'm going to go through a few of them with you. Transparency in government was his big thing, because supposedly, we have just been through a presidency where we had no idea what was going on. So transparency in government was number one. Does anybody remember the backdoor deals regarding Obamacare? How transparent was that? How transparent is this? Has been this deal in the first place? The supposed Slurpee Summit, for instance. It was supposed to be a full day thing and turned out to be an hour with tea and God knows if anything can be done in an hour. As a former White House intern, I know nothing can be done in an hour. And then he looks at the aspect of him as a whole. Everything that he has done, from Supreme Court nominations to supposed health care reform to supposed education reform, has been through backdoor deals. This is not transparency. Now let's look at the second thing: health care reform. Healthcare reform. Christopher Walker Fredrickson, the creator of my promos and a very good friend of mine, as well as a radio talk show host of the Paul Revere program, is a diabetic. He actually lost his health care as a result of Obamacare. Lost, did not regain, did not gain more. Has lost his health care as a result of Obamacare. How is that health care reform? Colleague of mine, Kristen O'Brien, I said the wrong name, has said to me time and time again, she is in Canada actually, she has said to me time and time again that she travels to her friends in California just to get a mammogram. We're turning into that healthcare system and they've got people coming to us to get taken care of. How is this healthcare reform? And I've said this time and time again. It's not only a tax mandate, it is a death sentence to many Americans. Now, I've spoken many times about a friend of mine who is on unemployment. He actually, as a result of unemployment, and this is with Obamacare, ladies and gentlemen, he has made too much money with unemployment to get healthcare benefits. How is this healthcare reform? The first action, the first objective of healthcare, of this supposed healthcare reform is, take a wild guess, federally funded abortions. Don't believe me? Look it up. The same thing that in the backdoor deal with one of the worst legislators of all time had resulted in an executive order stating that federally funded abortions would not be involved in this situation. The first action of Obamacare, other than revoking health care from other people, has been federally funded abortions. How is this reform? And I'm going to close with this one objective. 75%, or this one statement rather, 75% of polled doctors and physicians and, and pre-med students, I believe, were involved in this poll as well. But majorly doctors have said they're either going to retire, shorten their hours, or limit their involvement in the medical community in some other way once Obamacare is fully enacted. How is this reform? In a couple of weeks, I hope to have Ken Sunelli, who is a state attorney general and has been involved in a lot of aspects regarding this, including a lawsuit, which sadly, I believe, the last I heard, had failed, but will probably be going on appeal, and I hope will be going on appeal. And I'm also involved in, and I actually just had him on the radio show, Alex Cortez's program, defundobamacare.com. And I urge you to look at this. Now let's look at the third objective. I'm going to get my Tower of Truth. The third objective, and then I'm going to move on to the next factor. Your government, not ours. Your government, not ours. Now let's look back a little bit to this agreement. Your government, not ours. Bush tax cuts, the Bush tax cuts, had overwhelming national support. All levels of the Bush tax cuts got overwhelming national support. Obamacare got less support than Obama right now in his own polls. However, the Bush tax cuts are now being cried over by the Democratic Party because they didn't want a certain level, and Obamacare is processing through. How is it our government? And when he walked away from this, I have to say this, when he walked away from this press conference, I can only imagine the curse words that came out of that man's mouth. And I'd be upset too. But here's the thing. It is not like he's new at this. It is not like he has not been warned by the American people. Many times, many rallies, from Tax Day Tea Party rallies to Glenn Beck's rally to local rallies, have stated time and time again, President Obama, listen to us. We don't want this, or we need this, or we need that. And he lets it fall on deaf ears. So there's no reason for him to be frustrated. It's not like he's working so hard and he doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know what he's doing, but he's working so hard and he's not hearing any feedback. He hears the feedback. If he didn't hear the feedback, you wouldn't see the gray hairs coming out of his head, nor the steam coming out of his ears. It's just that simple. I'm going to take a break, and when I get back, we are going to go right into my interview with Andy. Andy is just this amazing man. A bluecollarcorner.com. Take a look at it. A hard hat, 9/11 hard hat pledge.com. If you are a blue collar worker, I beg of you, please sign this and show this nation and show this Iman that we are not for sale. We'll be right back right after this with Andy of the bluecollarcorner.com.
This is Christopher Fredrickson, the 21st Century Paul Revere, host of the Paul Revere Show and North Carolina senatorial candidate, and you're listening to Heather on the Hill with Heather Bachman.
Andy, thank you for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Heather. It's been a real pleasure.
Tell me a little bit about the current events situation regarding the 9/11 mosque. Is there anything new going on?
Well, first of all, our real estate mogul, Sharif Gamal, the former waiter, is once again being sued by yet again another bank for defaulting on a six-figure loan.
Really?
Yeah. This is his second round of this. And also, what has the hard hat pledge, the pledge that I created,
right,
has now spawned a boycott of any businesses that are doing business with either Gamal or Imam Rauf are also part of the boycott, and it's really starting to pick up a lot of traction, especially on Facebook.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, Crane's Magazine just did an article on it, so that also gave us a lot of buzz out there.
Now, tell us a little bit about, and I will definitely be there Tuesday, but tell my listeners a little bit about the 9/11 mosque documentary that is going to be premiering on Tuesday night.
Well, it's called Sacrifice Survivors. The story is behind the Ground Zero Mosque. And it's actually a documentary told by the people that it actually occurred to. You know, I'm in it as well as other family members and survivors and people whose lives have been, you know, torn asunder. And there's a lot of stuff that people don't know, you know, stuff like the amount of children that died that day, you know. This was something I wasn't even aware of. You know, there were 8 babies that were murdered that day. And, you know, that was when we first screened it, I had no idea. I was completely blown away. And then to listen to grandmothers and parents and brothers and wives and husbands speak about their lost ones. It was just devastating.
Absolutely. You know, you and I have spoken many times about this, and one thing that we definitely agree on is the victims of 9/11 are still walking this earth. There are ones that did perish, obviously, in the planes and in the towers and in the Pentagon, but there are still ones that still walk this earth, not only EMTs, but, like you said, family members.
Exactly. This isn't an event that occurred, you know, 4 or 5 decades ago. This is something that happened less than a decade ago. Mm. And the people are very much alive, walking around with all of the pain and all of the grief. And you're also talking about a very, very unique situation where a whole terminology was created, you know, and it was called double funerals. And I went to about a dozen double funerals. And what a double funeral was one service that you had for one of the missing where you had no remains, mm-hmm. nobody to put in a casket, nobody to look at, nobody to bury. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you get that phone call a year later, just when you think you've processed and put all the pain and the horror, you know, together and started to work it out and started to heal. All of a sudden they find a bone or a teaspoon of DNA. Because I'm telling you, right now, as we speak, as they're still putting Ground Zero together, they're finding DNA every single day. And they're not telling anybody in the media about it. Mm. And let me tell you, they say time heals all wounds. This does not work in this situation. If anything, the extra time actually makes things more hurtful. And the secondary funerals were the ones that were just absolutely the most painful. And for them to even think of putting a mosque on top of their ashes would be like a funeral number 3. So that's why I will be fighting this thing if it's the last thing I do. You know, we will be lying down in front of the bulldozers that go near that building, and I guarantee you that.
Now, I talked a little bit about, in the intro of the show, I talked a little bit about perception, because we look at the WikiLeaks as also a perception of international perspective. But we also be looking, and we spoke about this in the last interview, about perception of the Islamic faith towards a mosque. This would be a symbol of victory to them, would it not?
It would, absolutely. I mean, every radical Muslim on the planet would consider this their trophy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about it, I'm a little uncomfortable with the fact that one of the founders of Hamas is complete in support of the Ground Zero Mosque. You know, so here we have our president of our United States, our mayor, our governor-elect, all in consensus with one of the founders of a terrorist group, Hamas. Now, I don't know about anybody else, but I got a problem with that, you know?
Mm.
And I'm sure many Americans do as well.
One of the most intriguing quotes I've ever heard from the Imam was this one that actually I heard through a friend of mine. He has stated that he is looking forward to the Islamic flag flying over the White House.
Wow. Okay. I didn't hear that. If that's true, then that's damning.
Absolutely.
Because anything, when you say Islamic, do they mean Sharia? And anything that is Sharia-based, Sharia is just complete and utter oppression.
Mm-hmm.
And Sharia is, it's not a religious thing. They use religion as the tool to get all the things they need. But basically, Sharia is control. Control of one's life, economic, political, social, and then religion, which is a very small share of it. I've even spoken with, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Zudi Jasser?
A little bit.
Okay, Zudi Jasser opened up a foundation by which he welcomes Muslims in who are actually running from Sharia,
mm-hmm.
who came to America to be free of this, barbaric rule.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have all of these uneducated Muslims that they don't know how to read,
mm-hmm.
they're not aware of what's going on,
mm-hmm.
and you have these very charismatic imams. And they're treating it like it's the 7th century. And this is the way things are done. And you're supposed to murder people. And, you know, anyone who's not a Muslim is an infidel only to be either converted or murdered. You know, and that's why you have this radical wing. You know, and we need to stamp that out. And Zudi Jasser, and major, major kudos to Zudi, because to have the guts and the bravery to create such an institution really puts them in the crosshairs of these groups, these very powerful, dangerous groups.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he's brave enough to get out there and put his life on the line, you know, I have tremendous respect. And that's also, Heather, to let you know,
mm-hmm.
I work with Muslims. There's some of the, I love some of these people. You know, they go to school with my kids. I know their parents. They came here to run away from all of that.
Right.
When they see this thing creeping, and they call it creeping Sharia, when they see the signs of this, it worries the heck out of them. And they came to America just to be free of this. So I think, as of late, I don't know if you noticed, but a lot of these homegrown terrorists who have been involved in sting operations, who have been busted,
yeah.
all of the evidence came from fellow Muslims. So you know, looking at that gives me hope that there truly is a moderate Muslim. You know how people say, oh, there's no such thing. You're either Muslim or you're not. No such thing as moderate Muslim. Well, there is. There is a moderate Muslim. And after talking with people like Frank Gaffney and Andrew McCarthy and Zudi Jasser and doing some reading on my own, I found out, yes, there is. It isn't one big, gigantic, you know, group against us. There are Muslims out there that love our freedoms and want to live as free Americans just as we do.
That's a great perspective. I mean, and I agree with that. And that's one of the things, obviously, also people like Juan Williams have said. There is a separatist agenda that you have to put on Muslims. There is the Muslim extremists that we are at war with, and they're the Muslims that are literally running from their own faith in a way when it comes to the extremism. And you know, I agree with you. I've been to college and university with Muslims. I've gone to high school with Muslims, and some of them, and like you said, a majority of them are the kindest people, the nicest people. But there are still going to be that extremist sect that we still have to deal with.
Oh, without a doubt. And you know, it is these Muslims that actually are helping us identify them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have to create a vehicle by which they can, you know, come into the fold. And we need to welcome them. You know, you can't just be shunning all Muslims, because that's wrong. You know, we're actually shooting ourselves in the foot. These people, there are Muslims that want to help fight this menace.
Absolutely. They're the ones that ran from it in the first place.
And they know the signs, Heather. They know. They know what to look for. They know the red flags.
So you have spoken to Muslims who have actually said, this is the pathway to destruction when it comes to this mosque and the other activity that they have involved themselves in.
Oh, absolutely. Especially, you know, another Trojan horse would be Sharia financing.
Right.
Now, if you know anything about Sharia financing, if you look at it on the surface, Sharia financing sounds like a wonderful idea. I mean, it doesn't participate in the risky derivatives. It reinvests its money and its funds back into the community by which it's loaning to.
Mm-hmm.
It stays out of stuff like pornography and pork and, you know, anything that's morally maybe unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
But, and here's the big but, there's a process that's called Zakat. And Zakat is its charity foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they do Zakat, they start to send funding to these charitable organizations. And the problem is, what kind of charity is this? Is this a charity like CARE, who's been tied to Hamas,
mm-hmm.
you know, who have some very radical characters involved indeed, who are funding madrasas and mosques that have a radical element within them? You know, that's where the wheels kind of come off the rails there.
Yeah, charitable organizations is pretty much the most vaguest statement you could ever make. I mean, there have been lawyers who have been, quote-unquote, giving to charitable organizations they end up giving to themselves. I mean,
that's right. And what do they hide behind? They hide behind the fact that they're either a religious or a charitable organization,
mm-hmm.
so you're free from governmental scrutiny.
Oh, it's disturbing. And I'm so glad, people like you are actually fighting against this. Because if I see this, I am moving. I swear to God. Because it just cannot happen. It's just spit in the face, not only of the state and this nation, but of the world. And like, because as you've said, the Muslim faith is trying to restructure itself, and now we're just cutting it down by its legs, pretty much.
You bring up a good point. And it's, you know, that's the first time I ever heard it put that way. The Muslim faith is in a sort of rebuilding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's trying to break free of the older, barbaric, you know, radical rule and try and become more of a freer, tolerant, you know, nation like ourselves.
But the bottom line is that they're being threatened. They're being scared. I mean, Jim Lafferty's been on this program. He's the head of an anti-Shiite organization in Virginia who is very close to a mosque that is still being watched to this day because it has connections to a 9/11 bomber. And he has said that people have been threatened as a result of them trying to restructure the Muslim faith as a whole.
That's right. And, you know, Jim is a great man. I've been at several functions with him and rallies, and him and his wife, they are two champions,
mm.
you know, when it comes to battling this whole stealth jihad or creeping Sharia or whatever they're calling it these days. But, you know, I've seen jihad. I've seen both faces of it.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the radical jihad on 9/11,
mm-hmm.
you know, watching the planes hit the building, uh-huh. running in there, the mayhem, the chaos, the death, trying to get people out of there, fighting our own people, fighting security guards to get people out of their chairs, getting down to the ground, trying to stop firemen from going into the building. You know, I mean, I write about it in this book that I'm writing, where I'm confronted by the fire department, and we're looking at each other. I'm running in. I'm running out. They're running in. And there's a young kid, and I grab him, and I tell him, yo, this ain't the place, man. You know, there's time to rescue, and there's time to run. I said, this is a run. And he's like, no way, I'm going in there. I said, okay. And then I said, you really need to listen to me. And one of the, it looked like one of the lieutenant guys came up to me. He's like, what can you tell me? And I said, I've been working in this building for the last 15 years. I know this design of the building. I said, what has happened right now, I said, due to the design of the building, the whole entire load is distributed within the exterior of the building. I said, now what just happened is two of the walls, from what I could see, have been ruptured. And we've got about three or four landings, I'm guessing, that have been penetrated. I said, all of that load is now coming in the exterior of the building, and you're missing hunks of it. I said, everything that I know about construction and engineering is telling me this building's coming down. We need to get the hell out of here. And he just looked at me and he goes, I appreciate everything you said, but it's not the way we do it. Oh. And the freaking guy took his people and he ran right into that building.
Oh, my God.
And the next time I remember seeing their faces was in the paper.
Oh.
A few days later.
Oh.
Guys that perished. So
and
this thing is more real to me than anything.
Huh? What'd you say? I'm sorry. I misheard you.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, this whole violent radical jihad is more real to me than anything else. And I'm going to do anything I need to do to stop that mosque.
Absolutely. And I'm behind you. My fiancé's going to be signing the pledge this week. And it's definitely a fight that needs to be done. We cannot put a mosque on that property.
And did you, just recently now, I have been to the Ground Zero Mosque. I was actually posing as a building inspector because I have all the credentials and the badges.
Mm-hmm.
So I went onto the site and I started to look around. And right now they're doing construction inside the building. Now, Heather, why don't you answer me that question? Why would anybody be doing renovations in a building that they're going to knock down? And just recently, the Imam Rauf has come out and said his whole goal was to start building these cultural mosque centers all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe this whole Ground Zero was sort of like a trial balloon to see if he could get away with it, and to kind of test the waters, because look at what happened. He has no financing.
Mm.
You know. And the opposition has been tremendous. So I think the whole reason behind him doing this might have been just a PR event. And if he got shot down, well then, okay, at least I got all of this publicity. Now maybe I could build it in other parts of the world. So I think either way, this guy wins, I think. But as long as it's not down at Ground Zero, that's one battle that I consider a win on. But the game's not over.
You know, you made, I know we're running a little late, but you made an interesting point about, you know, how he was talking about this. And I brought up the aspect of when he said, I don't know if you remember this, but he actually said, if I could take it back, I would. And then Donald Trump offered him cash to pay for everything, to pay for the building, and he turned it down.
That's true. As a matter of fact, I spoke to Mr. Trump's chief operating officer because we do work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, I said, you know, could he speak on behalf at one of our rallies? And, you know, the guy's name is Matt. And he goes, Andy, he goes, you know, Donald doesn't do that. If anything, he might be making a bid on the building. And I said, wow, Matt, that would be great. He goes, yeah, he's going to offer him a significant profit. And maybe it'll just make the whole entire thing go away. Donald's a hero, and everybody loves him. I said, Matt, that's an awesome idea. Tell him I wish him luck, you know? And then it turned out, you know, that he turned him down. But it was worth the shot.
It's absolutely disgusting. that man should be hung, I swear to God. But anyway, Andy, we're getting off the subject. Please give us the information about the premiere of the documentary. Where can they see this?
Actually, there's a trailer right now. You can go check it out at sacrificedsurvivors.com. There's a two-minute trailer, and you can actually order the DVD right from the site.
And the premiere is on Tuesday night?
And the premiere is Tuesday night at St. Luke's Theater. It's on 308 West 46th Street.
Thank you so much, Andy. Thank you so much for everything you do, and we will definitely keep in touch.
Heather, thank you, honey.
This is Heather Bachman for Heather on the Hill. We'll be right back right after this.
This is Christopher Fredericks from the 21st Century Paul Revere, host of the Paul Revere Show and North Carolina senatorial candidate, and you're listening to Heather on the Hill with Heather Bachman.
Yes, you are listening to the Heather on the Hill program. Feel free to take a look at my take a listen to my previous episodes on heatherbachman.com. That is where you can find the podcast powered by Podomatic of the Heather on the Hill radio program. And feel free to also comment on my Facebook fan page, facebook.com/BACHMANHEATHER. But be careful because I do respond. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/HeatherBachman. Once again, BACHMAN. You know, I'm very glad. I'm actually kind of glad that that James Allen wasn't able to be on the program, because I've been wanting to have Andy on for a very long time. I just haven't had the schedule availability. And I'm just so glad he got to speak about not only this amazing, amazing movie, which I urge you to buy the DVD and take a look at it. But I also am just so glad to hear that the fight is still going on, because this is a fight we cannot afford to lose, as not only as a Christian nation, but also as a nation, period. We are a nation of religions. We are not just a Christian nation, but we are founded on Christianity, and we are founded on the basis and the agenda of open religion. Yes, I agree with that, and religious freedom is definitely important. However, when you have something that has been overwhelmed from within by such a horrible, inhumane, disgusting sect like the Islamic faith has had within itself, by these terrorists and these horrible, horrible people, you have to take a step back and figure out what is going to be the reality of this. Is it really going to be a cultural center, or is it going to be a symbol of victory? Is it going to be something that is going to really create a new era, as the Iman likes to say, for this nation and this world? Or is in reality going to be exactly what he says, which is what he says inadvertently, which is a mosque? You cannot say that America has more blood, more Muslim blood on its hands than the Al-Qaeda or any terrorist organization, and then say you're going to have a cultural center. You cannot say that if you could take things back, you would. And then Donald Trump offers you more money than you paid for the same building and then turn it down. You can't do that. And, you know, as he said before, they are building this mosque under our noses. They are building it from within the building now, the condemned building, the building that they kept saying they were going to tear down. And the building itself is a crime scene, believe it or not. Landing gear fell into this building. So it is not only a hallowed ground, but it is part of the actual events of 9/11 as a whole. Think about that. This is the same building where the landing gear crashed into. This is the same building that was the last thing the airplane touched before it crashed into the Twin Towers. It's disgusting to think that we're going to allow the symbol of victory, the symbol of terrorism, the symbol of indescribable fury on the same property. And now, in the same building. It's horrendous. And I hope and pray that even if you're not in New York, you take a look at the mosque in your area, as well as the New York mosque, and compare and contrast. Because it is not just in New York. New York is definitely a symbol and definitely an important event when it comes to this mosque situation. But as Andy has said many times before, this is just the tip of the iceberg that's going to dive into this nation. It is not just New York. So don't step back and say, well, it's not my state, not my backyard. Wait until it turns into your backyard and then see how you react. Because it will happen in your area. It is happening. Take a look on the news. Every day you see state news reporting another mosque being popped up. And I'm not, like, and I've said it more times than I can count, I'm not against the religion as a whole. I'm against the extremist majority that is religion and as a result needs to be paid attention to. It is a threat of this nation. It is a threat of this world. It is a threat of society and sanctity and sanity as a whole. It is not religious freedom when it comes to this type of agenda. It is not religious freedom. It's terrorism. I hope you enjoyed this program as much as I enjoyed making it. I would love to hear from you. Please feel free to email me at heather@heatherbachman.com. Also, obviously, go on my website, heatherbachman.com, for columns, for articles, for interviews, and also, as I said before, for podcasts of previous episodes. We've had everybody from David Limbaugh to the great Andy, and I am so happy to announce that this program is also going to be expanding very soon to other stations, so stay tuned. And feel free to comment on my Facebook fan page. Feel free to join the debate Obama doesn't want, because that's the only way we're going to win this nation back. You know, I've spoken to many candidates who have lost, many candidates who have won, and many who are about to walk into state houses and governmental buildings for the first time as legislators. And I say to them, you're not the only ones starting a new day. It is in the nation as well. Not only the Tea Party, not only the parties as a whole, but the American citizen. We have never seen so many American citizens literally doing their research since the American Revolution, and I really do believe that. And also, this is actually, in a sense, another American Revolution. We, on Election Day, through taking the House of Representatives, as well as many gubernatorial and state elections, have shown the Democratic Party we are not only not for sale, but we are not asleep anymore. And I hope and pray that everyone who is listening stays awake. Feel free to tune in next week, Sunday at 10 a.m. right here on FTR Radio. And also feel free to take a look at some previous episodes on heatherbachman.com, powered by Podomatic. I'm also available on Stitcher.com. This is Heather Bachman for Heather on the Hill, for this nation, for this freedom, for all.